when you're treating somebody with bevacizumab in the metastatic setting, you undertake certain risks, but the patient's prognosis is very poor to begin with. You have these long discussions with the patient, and they understand that there is a slight increased rate of a fatal pulmonary hemorrhage and some other toxicities. But because they're facing such a grim prognosis and they know this drug will improve their chances that they'll respond and will improve the chances that they'll remain progression-free for longer and that they may survive their disease longer, oftentimes that risk is acceptable to them. When you're dealing with somebody who is in the curative setting, there are a couple of issues. One would be the acute toxicities of bevacizumab, and the other would relate to the chronic toxicities of bevacizumab. So many of our patients are already cured before they get any adjuvant therapy at all. And so anything that substantially increases their risk of treatment-related death really would be unacceptable for most physicians and, of course, most patients as well. Now, the challenge is how much bevacizumab will improve survival, if any, and how much will that increased risk be? Those are the things that we have to look at when the trial is done. The other issues with bevacizumab would be that one might think that since you've removed the tumor, that the risk of pulmonary hemorrhage would be substantially reduced. But there may be some other toxicities that maybe we haven't appreciated yet. It may very well be that the addition of bevacizumab with chemo may impair healing. It's possible that we could see more bronchopleural fistulas. That's always possible, maybe a healing issue with the bronchial stump. We have seen the problem with TE fistulas, tracheoesophageal fistulas, when combining bevacizumab with chemo radiation. There are a couple of trials now that have reported that can be a complication and actually can lead to early death. The other issue with bevacizumab would be the long-term risks. On the ECOG-led trial, patients will be receiving it for up to 1 year. And we know that there are some potential toxicities, perhaps some theoretical toxicities, cardiovascular-wise, that maybe aren't appreciated, perhaps leukoencephalopathy and other CNS-related toxicities that maybe have not been appreciated at this point either.
Granted that colon cancer surgery is not the same as lung cancer surgery, but do you take any solace in knowing that in the adjuvant colon trial at this point, they haven't seen any big signals?
Yeah, that's very encouraging.
And I guess, and getting back to that C08 colon trial, you know, that was one of the quickest accruing adjuvant trials we've ever seen in oncology. There was tremendous enthusiasm about it. And I think that doctors and patients were looking at, you know, seeing that they give conventional therapy and they're still looking at a pretty high residual risk of death, you know, in selected populations. And the fact that, sure, we don't know whether the Bev's going to work, but at least it's something different that you could offer to a patient. What do you think the response is going to be, both in the clinical investigator community, but particularly in the docs in practice, to the 1505 trial?
I think it will be met with enthusiasm, and that's partly related to the fact that adjuvant chemotherapy has now become standard of care. It's become ingrained in us. Perhaps one of the difficulties in accruing to prior trials might have been the skepticism or perhaps the nihilistic view that some have that chemotherapy should be given to patients with lung cancer, given the experiences of the 1970s and 1980s. But it's become pretty standard, and I think most physicians will be interested in this type of trial. It does hold promise. I think it's our most promising trial, and it is to look to improve the cure rate for patients.